Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith. A culture that rejects Christ is a culture that says it's the yardstick for moral choices. And those choices lead to polling place choices that determine a nation's destiny. So where does true morality come from? Stay with us. From the Moody Church in Chicago, this is Running to Win with Dr. Erwin Lutzer, whose clear teaching helps us make it across the finish line. Today, in a series on why the cross can do what politics can't, Erwin Lutzer brings a message on the cross as the basis for morality.
Well, I know you won't believe this. In fact, you'd better not believe it. But I still remember the days when there were these locomotives that used coal. In fact, when they pulled into town, a town of about 100 people, but several elevators filled with grain, when the locomotives pulled in, even though we lived 6 miles from the town, we could, on a clear day, see that the train had arrived. Especially when it started up, every one of those chugs, just billows of smoke. I don't know where the EPA was in those days, but the atmosphere was polluted. One of the things that the engineers used to say about those trains, once they had about 100 boxcars filled with grain and going about 55 or 60 miles an hour, is that it would take several miles to stop. Just the inertia of the weight on those iron railings would keep the train going. So long after the motor could be stopped and the engine come to a halt, the train could still go along the tracks. As we look at America today, we can see that the train, the Judeo-Christian morality that many of us grew up with, the train seems to be stopping. The motor seems to have come to a point where it no longer generates the power and the steam. And what you have in society is the memory of a Christian consensus, to quote the words of Francis Schaeffer, where people know that at one time we really did, as a nation, generally speaking, believe in absolutes. It's not that everybody agreed as to where the line should be drawn, but they knew that somewhere there was a line that should be drawn. And even though the Bible was not widely believed, it was nevertheless widely respected. And there were certain expectations that we had of people. And of course, they frequently disappointed us. But still, everybody knew what the standard should be, even if they didn't live up to it. And now the train seems to be stalled on the tracks, and everybody is wondering, how in the world can we get this engine going again? How can we reverse directions and turn this country back? I think that one of the evidences of the confusion that exists in today's world is the increasing role of law in the United States, in our courts. Let me illustrate it to you, and it's hard for me to say it exactly, but maybe some illustrations will get at what I mean. On the one hand, you have radical individualism fueling every ambitious, every greedy desire that the human heart might have, and encouraging us to go for it. On the other hand, you have the courts constantly being brought to play to douse the fuel of this individual passion, the if it feels good, do it crowd. And so you have the conflict there that takes place. Did you read this past week about the couple that killed their newborn baby, crushed its skull? Little baby born in a motel room with the father and the mother present, the unmarried father and mother. I mean, I don't know how you felt, but I was shocked when I discovered that not only were they going to be tried for murder, but if they are correctly found guilty, as it appears that they are, they might receive the death penalty. I read that and I was surprised. Were you surprised? I mean, they could have killed this baby a week before and done so legally. So on the one hand, you have the abortionists who say that it is legal to have an abortion whenever you want it, for whatever reason, at whatever point of the pregnancy. So on the one hand, you have that fueling society, and then on the other hand, you have the law suddenly coming up and saying, now you committed murder. Well, logically, you might say, if it was murder an hour after the baby was born, why might it not be murder a week before it's born? But you can't ask those kinds of questions in our society. And so what you have is, on the one hand, you have this fueling of individualism with its arbitrary morality, and then suddenly it is doused by law that comes on the other side. Maybe that helps you understand what I'm getting at, but perhaps not yet am I clear. What we have in society today is this middle point that existed in American life, this middle area between law and freedom, where people were able to resolve their own tensions and their own problems and only occasionally resort to law. That middle area has now been squashed. In many instances, it no longer exists. People can't resolve their own differences anymore. The law has to be brought in. Did you read the Trib? Front page, today's newspaper. Here's a man who is harassed sexually by other men at work. He goes to the management. The management won't do anything about it. So now he has a court case, and the judges are looking at it, and they're beginning to prosecute in such instances. And you say to yourself, why can't this just be resolved? Why can't there be compromise? Why can't there be understanding? Why can't an organization, a factory in which he works, have some rules? And why do the courts have to be brought into it? The problem is that America has so smashed character. It has so depleted those resources between relationships, between people, where it used to be able to solve those problems, where reasonable people could come to some agreement. Now it is being thrown to the courts. I think that we should have guessed, should we have not, that a society, that a country that has 70% of the world's lawyers would eventually take every single desire and turn it into a right. And so you have reproductive rights, and you have group rights, and you have PC, politically correct rights. They found a new right in the Constitution. The new right is that nobody should ever have to ever hear something with which they disagree. And so everybody has to say the same thing. Everybody has to approve of various kinds of behavior. And what you have in society, therefore, is enforced tolerance. And as a result of that, people are beginning to ask the question, where do we go with this intrusion of the courts into our lives to resolve what should be disputes that reasonable people should be able to deal with? Did you read in the newspaper some time ago where a judge issued a restraining order to a 3-year-old boy in a sandbox who was harassing a 3-year-old girl? I'm not making it up. I wish I were. How can you have that? It used to be that two mothers used to be able to work something out, and if the mothers couldn't do it, the fathers did it. And if the fathers weren't around, maybe the church resolved it. And now a judge has to adjudicate between two toddlers in a sandbox. It is evidence of the decadence of our society that no longer can reasonable people work out even the most basic human relationship problems, and they have to resort to law because character and reasonableness and trust and decency no longer exists, at least not in large quantities. It's there, but so often the public square has been depleted that we have to go to the courts. Well, understandably, people are concerned. And some of you parents, you're concerned about what your teachers are teaching your children in school, and you ought to be concerned, and you ought to be involved. You cannot throw your children to those who would teach them how to be immoral and teach them some of the things that are going on in the schools. And so you're involved. But then the larger question is asked, what about the whole nation? And you have groups today who say, we need to reclaim it morally. I wish I could find it, but I have the habit of receiving things which disappear on their own somewhere in a mountain of information. But this week I received a brochure from a very reputable minister having another meeting on how to reclaim the moral ground that we have lost. I don't object to that. There are things that we can do together, even with non-Christians, that are important. I think that in Cincinnati, there are no adult bookstores, no X-rated videos are sold. That would be wonderful if that were to happen in the city of Chicago, but it would not be a victory that would be that great, because there's a lot of other things that can be purchased here in the city that would soon take the place of those videos and magazines. Years ago, my wife and I, in our home, we had ants. I don't know if you've ever had ants in your home, but it's not something that you want to necessarily go out and campaign in behalf of. I mean, we discovered that if you close the basement, they come through the door. If you close the door, they come through the attic. We don't know where in the world these ants came from. We're just glad that they aren't there anymore. You know, that's the way it is with sin. You block this door, and it comes through here. During the days of Prohibition, they said, you know, no whiskey. Well, whiskey was bootlegged, and people got it from here. And if they weren't able to get it from here, they stole it from there. It's a tough world out there. And when you're all finished, you wonder whether or not it was worth the effort, because unless you keep up some kind of a campaign all the time, your gains, first of all, are minimal. They don't last long, and they never really change the human heart. Well, this is Pastor Lutzer, and of course I'm not saying that we shouldn't be involved in various projects to clean up our community. Citizens have banded together against pornography and other evils, and that certainly has brought about some good. But in this series of messages, I'm emphasizing something even more basic. I'm talking about the transformation of the human heart. If anyone be in Christ, he is a new creation. Old things have passed away, and behold, all things have become new. And I'm interested in that newness, because what happens is God actually so changes our desires that finally we realize we no longer have to be slaves of sin. It's true, as I mentioned in the message, the ants might come through the window, they may come through the door, they may come through a crack in the foundation, but at the end of the day, we are able to say no to sin and yes to God because of the cross of Jesus Christ. Because the cross not only purchased our redemption, wonderful though that is, but also purchased our victory. Jesus triumphed over Satan there. And because of his triumph over Satan, you and I can triumph as well.
Erwin Lutzer, introducing The Cross, the Basis for Morality. Another message in his series, Why the Cross Can Do What Politics Can't. Next time, don't miss part two. In sorting out how to mix faith and politics, we all need some clear teaching. This 8-part CD series can be yours as our thank you when you give a gift of any amount to support Running to Win. Just call 1-800-215-5001. That's 1-800-215-5001. Online, go to offerrtw.com. That's offerrtw.com. Or write to us at Running to Win, Moody Church, 1635 North LaSalle Boulevard, Chicago, Illinois, 60614. This is Dave McAllister. Running to Win is a ministry of the Moody Church.